Hi there, and welcome to Oz Hour, the only place where you can hear everything you never knew about the wonderful and strange land of Oz.
That's right. Today we are coming to you with another very special episode of Oz Hour, continuing our coverage of Wicked, the life and times of the Wicked Witch of the West.
This is the second in a multi-part series exploring the source material for the Wicked Broadway musical and the 2024 film adaptation. In this special episode series, we will be covering the novel the same way we cover any other book in the Oz series, and we will be tying in references to the stage and cinematic musical throughout.
We're your hosts, Blake Stone
and Wyatt Swangham.
And as always, joining us is Hannah Aguirre.
Hello. It's me. That's it.
Okay, that was perfect. That was beautiful. So listeners, you might have noticed that last time we kind of took a different approach where Wyatt was kind of our spirit guide and Hannah and I were just jumping in as he recapped the story. Tonight, Hannah's in charge of that, which means she also made our special cocktail. What are we about to slurp, girl?
Tonight, we are drinking the Thinker's Tonic. The recipe for which you can find on our Instagram at Oz Hour Podcast.
Let's slurp it. Oh, wow.
Ooh.
Oh,
that's good.
Very good.
That's really good.
Oh, I just want to be on a boat.
Part two. Gilligan. Galinda. Galinda Evangelista. I'm sorry. We just needed to start off that way, you know?
It's giving Evangelista.
Okay, but where we really start off is at a train station. And it's giving Whitaka, Sitaka, Fritaka, Litaka, Dixie House?
Dixie House.
One of those.
I have a question. Well, okay. Two things, actually. Because... one, is that a joke about the New York train station? Because when they say Zitaka or whatever the first one, I'm like Utica, New York. So I'm wondering, is it like a joke about like subway stops in New York?
Like giving Grand Central Station.
Yeah, I don't know, nor did I look into it, so I have no right to ask.
I mean, it might be. Definitely when I heard that part like the first time, I was like, oh, we're somewhere else.
Yeah.
We're like in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're giving city.
We're in the city now.
Yeah, that's interesting. We'll have to look at the handy dandy map, see if any of those places are even on it.
Yeah, I know. Well, also, why do all the places end with Ica? Or Itica. It's like Itica.
Maybe because we're in the Glickus, like the Gillican.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
Lots of L's, lots of I's.
As we will learn, there's a place called Frotica. So,
exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we're at the train station.
Yes.
And who is at the train station is none other than Galinda. She is boarding the train. As she's boarding the train, she kind of notices a sleeping goat that's like sprawled the fuck out. And not only that, she's alone because usually she would be in this type of situation with her Alma, who's Alma Clutch. We're going to learn what Almas are. We'll get into it. So don't ask me questions just yet.
I was about to.
Oh, I know. Normally she would be with her Alma Clutch, but Alma Clutch stepped on a rusty nail and then was scared of getting frozen face syndrome, which my first concern stepping on a nail wouldn't be my concerned about my face.
Well, you know, like, what though?
Tetanus, right?
Yeah.
Like it has like a...
you get lockjaw.
Like lockjaw.
A common symptom of tetanus, which like when you get like, you know, when you step on a rusty nail or just like get a cut with rust in it, something
so that's
about
a real
the rust.
Thing?
Yeah. Like,
you're
it's like
trying
it's
to read Alma Clutch. So
I really was trying to read her because I was like, girl, you don't need to go to the hospital.
Girl, that's tetanus.
Hannah's out here getting like rust in her blood and she's not getting shots.
Every day, and she's just like, why does my jaw hurt?
Yeah, I've really stepped on nails a lot too in my line of work.
Oh, God.
So she is like, I got to go to the hospital. Glinda's like, you're fine. I'm like, I can make it. Oh, yeah. And they're going to Shiz.
Yeah.
By the way.
Off to Shiz.
And also to say,
got
to
go back to
Hogwarts. Like, we will learn this sort of soon, but Galinda is 17 in this moment.
Yeah.
So she's just this young, I won't. She's a very proud girl, mm-hmm. and so she's like, I don't need you, Alma Clutch. Like, yeah. I can get on a train by myself.
She's feeling confident.
Well, there's something kind of exciting about that too. It's like you're off to like college, and it's like your chaperone suddenly can't make the train ride with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're feeling adult. You're feeling adult.
But then you get on the train, and you're next to a goat, and you're like, what's happening?
Which, yeah, that is kind of how she's feeling. She's a little nervous, but also confident. But we're gonna see that. That is a lot of Galinda's personality.
Yeah.
And let's just give Galinda a little bit of a background, too. Because while Galinda is in the movie and the Broadway, I feel like we don't really know too much about where she's from or who her Mm-mm. family is, like, too much. So, yeah, we're going to get into that. Galinda, one of the things it says is, like, she's never been more than a day away from her family. Mm-hmm. So she's never been on, like, a train. She's never... she's ridden carriages.
Yeah.
With
it's
horses.
A completely different lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's, and also something it said in the book too that I just really like that I feel like ties into Galinda's like personality is like, yeah, even in those carriages rides, she'd be looking at her reflection in the window.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She's just like a girl. Like, yeah. That's, I mean, like, she's like, a young woman.
She's like,
yeah.
I'm
that's
pretty,
all she
and that must be important.
Yeah. And that's
worked
really
well
the only
for her
thing
so
I care
far.
About.
You know? I mean, it's worked really well.
Yeah, I'm definitely, I get it. I get Valley Girl. It's like,
yeah.
Mommy and daddy do everything for me, but I'm cool and I have friends.
Yeah. We're going to kind of see that a lot of things are. In a way, handed to her, I would maybe mm-hmm. say. But as we continue, home, where she does not travel far from, is Frodica. As you said earlier, it's a little market town. As it describes her parents, they seem to be a little bit more like old school. Like they're probably like mm-hmm. the same religion as Nanny, like Luraline, I would say.
It's interesting you say that because I didn't really think about this before, but like, you know, Melina, so Elphaba's mom, Melina. Melina's family is like back in when Hardings or whatever, or Colwyn Grounds, but they're like the richest people in like Munchkinland pretty much.
Yeah.
But they choose to live like out in the country, like secluded, like where it's like peaceful and they have their like little country lives and they're like Lurlinists, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so thinking about Galinda as well, like her family is like similarly like wealthy, like, but it's not crazy. It's just like we live in like a small town because like that's where we like to live. We can afford to
I
do that.
Feel like if
we're comfortable,
like, if you're a Gilligan yeah. or a Munchkin or whatever, like that's how you maintain your wealth is by like staying in that area.
Yeah.
Like,
if,
yeah.
When you were talking about last book, it's like Munchkin land is where like all the agriculture comes from. Like if you're a rich Munchkin, you're not gonna leave where the money comes from for you. You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah. That's true. That makes sense. But yeah. Also. Her parents, while being old school, they also were like, fuck the railway stations, like, fuck shiz. Well, maybe not saying fuck, but...
They seem scared, though.
Yeah,
they're just like, whoa. Like,
exactly.
Big city, not for us.
They're like, they describe shiz. They said shiz to them is a distant urban threat. So they're, yeah, they're scared.
They are old school. Yeah.
They're very old school.
Who did Galinda's parents vote for?
I think we might know.
Yeah.
The wizard.
The wizard, exactly.
But yeah, and just to go on Galinda's personality and also, you know, describe it to like the book and the movie, or not the book, the movie and the Broadway. It's very similar. She's like very, but I almost would say in the book, she's almost a little meaner.
The book is meaner. In the movies, but I feel
we
like,
get more of.
Yeah, the
her.
Context rolls in, but I feel like in the movie, you just get like kind of like a little vapid, but she's not stupid, but she's just kind of like an airy, like maybe accidentally rude, especially the Ariana Grande performance. It doesn't give intentionally rude at all.
Yeah.
But this version of Galinda. We're about to get into it. Not that nice at
yeah.
all. And quite selfish.
And yeah, we will be getting a lot of Galinda. And you, the listeners, you might get a little annoyed. So, but that's just what it is. Also, another thing about Galinda is that she's the first girl from Pertha Hills, which is from Frodica, but it's like the upper class area. It also has a lot of ancient temples there too, which also just gives like into the Laureline like religion, I feel like. But she's the first girl from Perth the Hills to be accepted at Shiz. So when she was leaving Frotica, that was a big fucking deal. Yeah. They're like, oh shit, like, let's go, Galinda. You're representing the whole fucking town. But yeah, so
the now, 17th of every April is now Galinda Day.
Yeah, exactly. Now, back to that old goat, because we're still on the train.
Yeah.
And he has awoken. And he's demanding things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He is he's asking a little bit of help to get his ticket so he can give it to the conductor. And he's like, sweetie, miss, hello, you're going to need to give me my ticket. You're going to need to give it to the conductor.
You know, I'm going to be honest. In my most recent read, this is not a good take, but like, this goat came off to me as entitled. Yeah. I won't say his name because we have not introduced him yet.
The goat. The goat has a very superior, entitled attitude about him, but it is such a dangerous thing to say because it's like, I don't know. It's like, what, he's uppity?
The thing of it too is that, you know, he is riding on this train with people, and he is allowed to ride on this train. As you know, he gives his ticket to the conductor. You know, the conductor is like, well, one, he calls him a beast. First off,
jokingly, but
yeah, lightly.
Yeah,
but then he also is like, oh, I'm surprised you can afford something like this.
Yeah,
and then, mind you, the goat. I almost said the name, but we're gonna pretend like we don't know who he is yet, because we don't know goats here. Okay, we don't know them. But no, he is telling him basically that, oh, yeah, I can afford it. And also, I paid double for my ticket.
Yeah.
So he's having to pay more to get there, and the ticket isn't accommodating for him.
I know. That's crazy. Also, that is crazy because it's like, you paid double, and then like, you the conductor can't even get the ticket for you. You have to ask people around you.
Yeah. When I pay that price, you give me a fucking lanyard that I wear.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Oh, he'd be exactly. Like, a collar? You want to collar me? But
no, that is kind of the start of us getting into some of the things that, you know, are different between maybe animals, and I will get my pronunciation correct, and people, or, you know, young girls like Galinda. And so, yeah, that is our interaction with the conductor and the goat and Galinda. The goat then introduces himself to her. His name is Dilamond.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Dilamond. Yeah. So,
but he doesn't say doctor at first. He just doesn't. Says
yeah. He does just say Dilamond. we will say that. He's not really giving much away just yet.
And Galinda has like no time for this.
Yeah.
She really doesn't. And she's irritated with him too because he's not saying her name. The correct Gillikinese pronunciation.
God. Yeah.
Galinda.
And this is important because in the movie and the stage production, we get Galinda saying in the classroom, like, oh, it's Galinda, like, you have to pronounce the ga, like, and she's being kind of bitchy about it.
Yeah.
Well, but, and like, even though, like, all the other professors seem to get
exactly
it just fine.
Yeah.
It's like, well, he needs a special fucking accommodation.
Yeah. If someone has a lisp, you don't correct them when they mispronounce your name.
It's Lisa.
And I do have to say, God, I feel like they did a better job in the movie explaining that than and the Broadway like play. I mean, obviously you're reading the book, so it's not like you can hear him say it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really explain like why he is not saying it correctly, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't really feel like it got into it. Where with the movie, it's like, you can hear it. He can't pronounce it the correct way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's different.
But as is, we'll continue on. He then continues to chat with Galinda she's not really into it, but, you know, she was already bored.
Yeah,
so.
She's like, I don't talk to strangers.
Yeah, she's like, and that's why he introduced, he was like, okay, well, we're not strangers anymore.
Yeah. So now I want to ask you all these super abrasive questions about your political stance.
Yeah. Literally. He's like, oh, you're 17 and you've never been here before? What do you think about animal rights?
Exactly.
Like, dude, leave her alone.
He's getting into, like, why, you know, asking her thoughts on the bans of restricting animals to ride on trains, like what he's doing right now. And he kind of gets into it. She's really like, okay, yeah, that's cool. Yeah. And he just keeps going. He's like, well, it's nice that I get to ride on here, but what about my mother? She can't even visit me and shiz. She'll have to go in a pen. Yeah. Isn't that fucked up?
And I will just also mention, there are two animals. Like, there's two types of animals. Yes. And we've already. Like,
yeah, wait, can we all take turns saying it?
What's the correct?
You go first.
Okay. Animals. Animals.
Okay.
Animals. Animals.
Okay. Animals. Animals.
Oh, so you did a different language for yours.
What? So you're not from Gilligan. Okay. You're not from Gilligan, it seems like.
Yeah, you've been to Disney before. Play it back.
Have you ever been to the city?
Wow. Well, but yeah, the pronunciation, honestly, is nuanced.
Yeah,
we're talking lowercase versus capital.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the only difference.
That's what we get in the book. You know, and one animal has a capital A, the other one has a lowercase A,
and capital A has a spirit, is what they say specifically, which I guess just means a like human consciousness trapped in an animal's body. Right. But whatever.
And we don't know
capital A.
What causes one to be one way and one to be the other way.
Yeah.
But and like
we just know that there are some that are that way and there's some that are not that way.
It seems like most people who aren't from like the Emerald City
don't
only know animals.
Like farm animals. Yeah.
Because like, you know, in the movie and in the musical, stage musical as well, it's like there's all these animals at Elphaba's birth, you know?
Oh yeah,
and
that
it's like,
too.
We do not interact with any speaking animals. The beast from
that
from
was the closest
Munchkin
thing.
Land.
Oh yeah,
is a beast.
Yeah.
Like, so that's really interesting.
That's true.
But yeah, like you were saying, like his mom will have to like be in a pen to go visit him. And what about the future of his children? They'll
and
never
also
have
just
this
like this whole like world and universe that we are in right now. Like even compared to like the classic books. Like, the classic books, we got animals left and right. We got inanimate objects talking to us that have souls. Like, we have everything that is...
And in the books that we read, it is a given. Every animal speaks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always
Jim
expected.
Jim speaks. Toto speaks. Chooses not to. It's like every animal speaks. There is no difference between animal and animal.
That's true. Although, in like, I mean, and it's going back pretty far, but then you think about the first book when 20 wolves get their heads cut off. I know. But yeah, it's just interesting and important to understand because the entire plot of this book hinges in part around like differences in classes, certainly, but also differences in classes of animals versus people. It's like there's so much in the same
a lot of oppression in this place.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it goes from medieval and then it switches when the wizard gets there, it goes to American. So it just goes oppression to oppression, you know?
Yeah.
So which is something we won't get into. Well, we will get into. Well,
I hope we get into that, actually, because that was a really interesting thought.
We will be getting into that. Don't you worry. So we arrived to Shiz, and Dr. Dillamond is nice enough to get Galinda a little carriage to make it to Krage Hall, which Krage Hall is part of Shiz. It's just the all-girls school. So we are at Shiz, we'll realize that there are different schools for different reasons. Mm. There'll be, you know, ones that have mainly boys. I mean, Krage Hall is the only girls' school, basically.
I think
but
so, yeah.
We'll run into a couple other schools that are at Shiz. Mm-hmm.
One thing I will just mention is, and kind of this is basically something like you were saying, Hannah, like, Galinda's coming from a place where she was the only girl who's ever left for school. Her family is rich. Everyone fucking loves her. They make it a national holiday when she leaves because they love her so much. But then she gets to Shiz, and it's like, she's the lowest person on the totem pole.
Yeah.
There's things she's never seen before. There's multiple groups of animals talking, and she's
nobody
like,
"Yeah, knows
in
who
cute
the
little
fuck
clothes."
She is.
Yeah,
there's so
no
many
one knows
people
who she
there.
Is. Yeah.
Everyone's on a level playing field.
Yeah,
and I think that is something that's different in like the musical, the stage musical, and the film.
True.
When Glinda comes in, everyone's like, "Look, it's Glinda! Oh my god, Glinda! She's so cool. She's so hot. Everyone likes her. She's immediately best friends with Fanny and Shenshen. Like everyone just like wants to be her and knows who she is." That's not the case here.
It's
that's not
the
vibe. No, but she does feel that very much in her head, let me tell you.
It's eating at her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the carriage ride, not very long. We're about 20 minutes. And she makes it to Craig Hall, and she runs into, and mind you, this is not me describing her. This is the book describing her.
Okay.
But she is a fish-faced, upper-class Gilliconese woman. Madam Morrible.
Madam.
I'm going to start calling people fish faced upper class Gilliconese.
I know. You're like, okay, fish.
I am new Karen. I hate to do this, but consistently through this section, Madam Morrible gets called a fish, and she's referred to as a fish. She's referred to as a carp. She's her clothing. Maybe we'll get to it, maybe we won't. But I just want to say that for the end of this book, it's very important to just remember that she was originally described as a fish.
We're definitely foreshadowing some fish play.
That's all I'm gonna say. But lots like I just play. Only caught that like more recently reading. I was like, they call her a fish in the first sentence. So like, yeah. Just to say that.
Yeah.
So that's her.
We love that. And so yeah, she is the headmistress of Craig Hall, Miss Madam Morrible. And she is gathering the girls together to set them up as roomies.
Roomies.
And who else is there? The Amas.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to, this is the time where we get into what the fuck is an Ama and why are they like, why are they here? So Amas for students, it's basically like having a chaperone. They are the ones who choose the roomies. They are the ones who introduce the students to other students kind of on the same class level.
Like social patterns.
And your Ama's like also like your nanny that like you grew up with.
Yeah,
right? Like,
it's giving nanny.
She comes from home.
And I will say Ama Clutch is giving nanny.
Like nanny and Ama Clutch
in a lot of ways. We're going to get into her character and her personality as well, but I will just jump the gun here a little bit. I fucking love Ama Clutch.
Yeah, Ama Clutch is cute.
Yeah.
And she's fun.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Glinda's here and she's like, she's pretty nervous because she's seeing all the other Almas there doing their little,
they're whispering.
Oh, we're going to bring her to
tea.
Her and we're going to get her to her. And
now,
it's going to be perfect and beautiful.
And now Glinda is othered.
Yeah.
Again.
And now Glinda is feeling very unrepresented. She is alone. She doesn't have anyone to, you know, basically put her with another person that she feels like she should be matched with, you know?
And I will say it's a testament to Ama Clutch because Glinda specifically is thinking, if Ama Clutch was here, she would have paired me up with a girl who was a little bit higher than me on the social ladder so that I don't have to be embarrassed that she's my roommate, but then I can be friends with her and it like actually will be good for me. Like, so it's like Glinda trusts Ama Clutch and Ama Clutch knows how to do that stuff. Like she, in the way that Nanny is trained in like child rearing and like being, doing her thing, Ama Clutch is like society version of that. So it is an interesting parallel that you call it, or like you refer to her similar to Nanny, because it is the same.
It's
really
is, it's,
interesting,
it's pretty similar
to the way you just put that. Because it's like, I feel like up until now, Glinda has taken for granted that she's leaving everything she's ever known. And at least she was supposed to have her Ama there.
Yeah.
Now she doesn't have
her
Ama there. Like, she has, I feel like the reality of I have left my comfort is getting very real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because also, this is about to be her new home.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants to be comfortable. And so, as the girls start dwindling down, we start getting, you know, they're getting paired up and they're going to their rooms and they're doing their things. She's getting nervous and some talk of the pink dormitory is getting brought up.
Which, not the pink dormitory.
I would say if someone said I was going to the pink dormitory, I'd be like, oh, fun. But no.
Fuck yeah. No.
We do not feel that way.
Don't want that.
Galinda does not feel that way. Galinda is terrified of being in the pink dormitory because the pink dormitory means that you are with one Alma and like multiple girls.
13 other girls.
Which... Galinda's the only one, like, really with an Alma. So that means her Alma, who's supposed to be just taking care of her, will be taking care of multiple other people.
And oh my God, poor Alma Clutch. Like,
yeah,
if that
I
were
know,
the
just
case,
getting thrown in.
She's like, oh, my wounded foot is healed. What's going on? 13 girls?
Oh
my God.
Brother.
I will also say it's kind of funny because while this is kind of happening, Galinda's thinking, well, I didn't hear anything about roomies. Like, maybe my parents paid so I could have a private suite.
She did,
and then, like, the next thing that happens is Madame Morrel being like, you're going to the pink room with all the 13 girls. And it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So Galinda is just being so shocked right
Galinda
now.
Galinda was not expecting to have a roomie, I must say that. She was. She really did expect her parents to pay for the private suite.
Yeah.
She said, it also said she did not read the fine print, which I was just like, of course she didn't.
Yeah.
Honestly, say what you want about Galinda, but if you were expecting your own suite and you're finding out that's not happening, that's a bad day.
No, that's the bad
thing. I would be upset too, I must say. So she's getting scared and she's like, okay, I need to talk to that fucking fish-faced bitch. Let me get her here. No, she goes up to her and she's basically begging. She's like, I cannot be in the pink dormitory. I am actually like my Alma. She's not here right now because she stepped it on a rusted nail. But she just in general is not equipped to take care of this many amount of girls. And she kind of goes a little crazy. It was saying things like, my Alma is mentally not able to do that. And I need to talk to you actually in private about
Galinda
this.
Galinda is loyal to no one.
No.
Yeah. Like, she's Alma loyal to herself.
Alma
is not even around to defend herself. And she's like, yeah, she thinks the toothbrush has a history.
Yeah. Like, well, we'll get there.
We're not even there. No. Sorry.
We will be getting there. But no, yeah. So Galinda basically is able to cut a deal with Madame Morrible, mm-hmm. saying, I will be talking to you later about why my Alma can't take care of that many girls. And Madame Morrible's like, well, since she can't take care of that many girls, she can at least take care of one other. And I'm going to pair you up with someone. And then comes in Miss Elphaba.
The fish chose a frog.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's crazy.
I will also say, although Madame Morrible this whole time is being very, like, I kind of like Madame Morrible here because she's, like, she's being sassy, she's being witty. It seems like she knows what she's doing, and she's like, you're just another one of these girls who's trying to do her thing. Just, like, I'll do my thing.
This has been my job for, like, 20 years.
Yeah.
You are not going to get the wiser of me.
And something I must say with Madame Morrible and Galinda's relationship as, like, we kind of, you know, continue on with them, Madame Morrible always seems to be scheming something when she is messing with Galinda, because I feel like she sees Galinda as someone she can, like, kind of mold into what she wants to do with her, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's a sucker born every minute, and she found one with Galinda.
She found one with Galinda,
and
exactly.
And I think they're both of their, like, upbringings, background, and personalities lend well to the idea of always looking for what you can get out of somebody.
Mm.
And so the same way that Galinda is trying to interact with her in a way to get what she wants, Madame Morrible is seeing that and interacting, knowing I'm going to get what I want someday too.
Yeah. So love that. Honestly, I love talking to you guys about that. I just feel like it's so much fun. But anyway, Elphaba's here.
Elphaba, the Thropter descending.
Yes, she is. And we're just going to describe her OOTD. She's in a popper red dress with gaudy fretwork and in clumpy old people's boots. Yeah.
It's not cute.
It's not giving Galinda, that's for sure.
Well, no.
And, you know, and she's green.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, she's green.
Let's not forget about,
like,
that.
She's not coming from Nest Hardings. She's coming from fucking
Quadlings.
So
what the hell do they wear there? Potato sacks
also,
and sandals.
Yeah. Maybe we should have opened up with this, although the cold open is fun too. But Last we heard, Galinda was 2 years, or excuse me, Elphaba was 2 years old, yep. saying horrors on the lap of some animal while they lived in yep. Munchkin Land. And now we flash
now
forward.
She's an adult.
What, 15 years?
Yeah, we get to see what a beautiful young woman she's.
Yeah. But also, thinking about the last conversations, the last time we were with Elphaba, her family was arguing and saying I'm pregnant over the idea that they might move to Quadling Country.
Yeah.
And now we're learning that's where she lived like the rest of her life, pretty much. Or at some point they moved there. So it is just interesting to know that and be like, okay,
that's
we're oriented.
So
that's,
Elphaba's here.
This is who we're getting.
This is the tie-in, like, and what happened to her.
Yeah. And let me tell you, Galinda, she was not happy about this pairing at all.
Unimpressed.
She saw her and was like, fucking kill myself.
She saw her and she said, you're green.
I am. But yeah, so we kind of get to the next day and Galinda's Alma has arrived. She's with a bandaged foot that's about 3 times her natural size. And Elphaba is getting herself unpacked and settled. She's like, this is where I live now.
Yeah.
This is where I am.
Pragmatic.
And Galinda's freaking out.
Stop being so nice to her. Stop being so comfortable here. This is not happening.
Yes. And Alma Clutch, she is so unbothered by Elphaba. And she's so unbothered by Elphaba by, like, because Galinda's like, excuse me, like, why are you not reacting to her being green? And fucking Alma Clutch's reaction is like, oh, you know, I am surprised that she's much taller being from Munchkin Land. Yeah. Very strange. I thought they were mainly short.
Yeah.
I was like, Clutch, yeah.
She's unbothered, unfuckwithable. Like,
so
she's
unbothered.
Just done.
Yeah.
I know it's Oz, and I think that that does add an element to it that people are able to, like, be polite and ignore that. I'm saying right now, if I ever see a green person, I'm going to be so afraid. I'm going to have tears in my eyes. I'm not going to be able to understand. I'm going to need inpatient care.
The universe is different now because that person has, like, entered your...
The drones have landed. That's all I'm saying.
My psychologist is like, it's okay, Jim Carrey from The Mask isn't real, but then Elphaba's in my classroom.
Oh my gosh. But also... Something else that Alma does that I just like, it just gives me warm feelings for Alma Clutch because I just love her so much. She's like, she calls out Galinda and is like, girl, you don't know shit. Maybe this might be good for you to be exposed to someone who's different than you.
Yeah.
And it's like,
that's
yes.
what we came here for.
Yeah, literally.
That is part of the college experience, which she is experiencing here at Shiz. Like, that is all of it. So just fucking accept it. But Galinda's not accepting it. And we go to the meeting with Madame Morrible and Galinda.
Mm-hmm.
And Galinda is saying some of the most insane lies that I've ever heard. She's talking about how unstable Alma Clutch is because she fell into her head and has something called like amnesia trauma, some fucking shit like that. She's like, this girl talks to inanimate objects, is not aware of certain beings that who are even alive. She broke some kid's back.
Because she like thought he was a rug or something.
Well, yeah,
she was cleaning something. It fell over on him and broke his back. And then she just started talking to the set next to it.
Yeah, not even being aware that this is what happened. So she's just like going off on Alma Clutch, which poor Alma Clutch catching these strays. Like she already stepped on a rusty nail. Like give the girl a break.
I know.
But yeah, and as this meeting is happening, something enters the room.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, something enters the room. It's a TikTok man.
TikTok man.
He's about 3 feet tall, made of burnished bronze. I don't know what that is, but I just wrote it down.
Just bronze.
with a plate on its front saying Smith and Tinker's Mechanical Man.
Yeah. So it's giving TikTokism.
It's giving TikTokism. It's giving TikTok of Oz. It's giving... All that.
Yeah.
We know about these.
We know TikTok.
It is so weird, though. Like, just to imagine it. Like, TikTok's everywhere. The one TikTok we have in the other books feels like, oh, he's a unique creature.
Right.
But then when I'm like, But people can just have a 3-foot-tall TikTok man that walks around their house at night.
We have the clock of the time dragon, which I don't really care for that much. And then we have this thing named Grommatic. Why does the name have to be like that? It sounds so like scary.
Grommatic. Madam Morrible and Grommatic. Yeah. What do you think?
Oh my God, couples Halloween costume.
Oh my God. Actually. Oh my God, that's actually really great.
Honestly, though, like in this conversation with Madame Morrible and Galinda, like how you were talking about how like Galinda thinks she can pull one over on Madame Morrible, but she's just like, I don't have time for you, little girl.
Exactly.
We do see like the scheming and cunning in Madame Morrible in this conversation, like the way that she keeps using the word we and stuff. Like, it's like, oh, well, we're making this plan together while also completely foiling what Galinda came here to talk about.
Yeah.
It's like, I hate her, but
it's chef's kiss.
She's a pretty good villain. We don't know if she's a villain or not yet, but I don't know.
And do we ever really find out?
That's kind of true.
That's actually
in the book.
But you know, she's good at what she does, I guess.
I would say she plays for a team that we probably wouldn't support if we were.
Yeah,
there.
We might not
that
be on the same side as her. But that's fine. But yeah, so that meeting happens.
I will just mention she's described as a bored carp.
She is. That is where we hear.
I just want to mention that.
Hear
Sorry.
The carp, little fish moment. But now we're back at Elphaba and Galinda's room. Elphaba is reading and playing with her hair, and Galinda's scheming. She's like, I have to figure out if there's at least a way I can get a new roommate next term. And so she's just like, any way I cannot be roommates with this person, I will fight my hardest to achieve that.
Like, let's make it very clear that they have not really spoken to each other.
Yeah, and they haven't really interacted.
I'm like, why do you care so much?
And Elphaba just seems to be minding, like, she's got herself settled into her room. Yeah. She seems to be, like, very low maintenance.
She's
now she's just reading.
She's used to dumb bitches acting like this with her.
Yeah she's that's very true. Self-sufficient. And, like, yeah, she's just doing her thing. And I think, like, the other thing, too, is Galinda's focus is like, okay, what are the really popular, no, not popular, who are the high status girls who I should be like befriending so that I can increase my own self and image? So that's partly why they're not talking too. It's like, it's not like just they're trying not to.
The friends you make at shiz are the friends you take into adulthood.
So that's true,
she needs status.
Which that is, you know, that kind of is giving college too very much, because it's like the friends you make here are the friends that you're supposed to have for the rest of your life type of thing. But yeah, she's like, okay, I need to meet new people. And she does meet some new people. And their names are Mila, Fanae, and Shen Shen.
That's right.
Which, you know, we know Shen Shen.
We know Shen Shen.
Fanae. Hi, Bo and Yang.
Hi, Bo and Yang. Hi, Fanny.
We pronounced it in the movies and the... Well, I don't even think they were in the musical.
They were. I don't think they really said their names. I don't think they said their names in the movie either.
I'm not sure.
No, they did say their names in the movie. It was Fanny in the movie.
Oh, really? Okay, see, because when I read the book first.
Yeah.
And I said Fanny.
You said Fanny.
It's spelled P-F-A-N-E-E.
Yeah. Okay.
But then in the audiobook he says Fanae, and I'm like, all right. I mean, that sounds nicer.
And also it's spelled, you know, the book that I was looking at, I feel like there was a lot of like typos and stuff, but I think it's spelled P-F-A-N-N-E-E, right?
Oh yeah, it might be two N's. P-F-A-N-N-E-E. Yep.
Okay, yeah. So I mean, okay, Fanae. I've never seen a Fanny spelled like that.
I know, When you start with PF, it all goes out the window. I can't make assumptions.
Yeah, everything's up to your imagination,
just like,
I guess.
There's fun spelling in this book that, like, if you don't read it physically, like, you won't get. Like, zebra is T-S-E-B-R-A.
Oh. Yeah.
Zebra.
Or, like, there's, like, they write with Fennec feathers. It's P-F-E-N-I.
Okay, bitch, so the typos that were in the book I was reading were maybe... not typos!
Oh, my God!
Because I did see that zebra, and I was like, okay, they're trying to say zebra.
That is so funny. She's like, who wrote this?
No, girl, that's just the
book. No, they did spell shiz, though, as shin.
Oh, okay.
Shin? Shin. With an N?
Yeah, with an N.
Okay.
Oh, well, that's wrong.
No, that is wrong. You may have just had typos.
The zebra was probably correct, though. Which I thought that was part of it.
That's so funny.
But, yeah, we learned that these girls are...
mean.
Mean and also extremely wealthy.
Yeah.
Like, they're way more wealthy than Galinda is. And that's why she's like, I need to get in with these girls.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I need to, you know, I need to... get up there with the high end people and not be with this fucking shaggy ass green ass mother.
Yeah. Green ass mother. People don't understand that, like, if you just be nice, it will take you places.
It really will. And also just embracing the moment.
Be someone that those rich bitches want to be around.
Exactly. And honestly, I feel like you could easily do that, and we will be getting into it. I know we keep saying we're getting into things, but I promise we will be.
We will.
We're sorry, moving listeners, forward.
We are having way too much fun, and I hope you're having fun with it.
But yeah, so, and with these high-end friends, Galinda was not very keen on sharing who her roommate was at first. She was like, these girls don't need to know, but I do want to gossip. And so I will be gossiping. And so
about
they do. about my roommate. So the girls start gossiping. They first kind of begin with her wardrobe, which is giving poor.
Mm-hmm.
Very poor. They're like, yeah, we're not into that. Finae, who is also a munchkin, also begins to talk about Elphaba's family, the Thropps,
mm-hmm.
and how... you know, the eminent Thropp was highly regarded. They kind of talk about how the eminent Thropp kind of put a militia that tore up the Yellowbrick Road when they were kids and stuff. But now her family is like, not that. Like, she's very much like, oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, this is where they started off at.
Yeah.
And now they're like that weird lady that
and
is...
now they're green.
Yeah. Now they're green and dress poor.
Yeah.
But yeah, they basically are saying how, you know, Frex and Melina never really lived up to that part of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they even go into now their family because everyone knows that they moved to Quadling. They're like, oh, well, they moved to Quadlings because they were criminals.
Yeah. And
you know, maybe because they were criminals or maybe they were speculators of Ruby.
Which is interesting.
Which I'm like, what exactly is that? Because then one of the girls is like, oh, no, she's not that because then she would have more money and she wouldn't dress so poor.
So speculators would mean like people who went out and either funded or physically
to
got
go
the rubies.
Find rubies yeah. at the Quadlings
yeah,
because
yeah.
the which, rubies were in Quadlings
like,
that
Turtle Heart
was
Turtle
so
Heart
nervous
said,
about. That's
we're protecting
what
the rubies.
Yeah.
So now 15 years later, those rubies have been pounded.
Because all damn. The people who went for the rubies got them.
But yeah, so they're just like, this girl's broke. But also like she comes from like kind of well, so maybe it's like chosen poverty. It just doesn't make sense. So they're just like making up all these like assumptions,
which
just
also,
talking.
It's funny.
Her dad is a minister.
It is chosen poverty.
It actually is chosen poverty.
Yeah,
like right.
Which is so funny because when they say that,
they didn't have to move to Quadling.
They say like, oh, maybe it's a chosen poverty, and it says they all knew that was nonsense, so they laughed. And it's like,
like
no, that's actually
it's
what it
literally
is.
True.
Like,
go ask true. Her.
It's like so. Finae never actually saw the time dragon.
Oh, yeah. Finae was in Nest Hardings. or Wen Hardings. Or where the fuck?
Wherever, the rich people are, I guess. But anyway, yeah, they continue making their insane assumptions about how raggedy she is. And they even go to blaming her Alma. They're like, oh, well, her Alma dresses her like that. Or maybe she doesn't even have an Alma. And Galinda's like,
she has an Alma.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm just gonna keep my mouth shut. I'm actually not gonna talk about that. So yeah, we, you know, the people at the school, they're not super big fans of Elphaba. And
it's
even
it's giving Dear Galinda, you are just too good. How do you stand it? I don't think I could.
It is very much giving that. Everyone is kind of a little bit against Elphaba because even Elphaba enters the little cafe that they're all hanging out in and everyone like kind of looks at her. They're all trying to join in on the whispering and the gossiping mm-hmm. and stuff. So it is very much giving that. Elphaba is Elphaba is not liked, basically.
Because she looks poor,
but
and
for
she's
no good reason.
They don't know her. Granted, they don't know anything about her.
Not that this is her responsibility, but like if if Elphaba went like really hard and started talking to people and trying to socialize and have a normal personality, it would have gone a long way. She didn't. Which it's not her responsibility. She shouldn't be singled out for the reason that she looks weird.
She has a chip on her shoulder.
Like, and yeah.
She does.
And she does. Because
she knows that she's not dumb.
Yeah, no.
She knows that people are, I don't know. She gets it. But anyway, so as time at school passes, we're kind of, you know, following Galinda. And Galinda's mindset of school is that, oh, you know, I made it here, so I think I'm done with learning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I need to really do anything. Like, I've worked so hard to get here, and I'm here now, yeah. So...
That was it.
I'm good. I don't really need to do it. She thinks that her beauty and her witty little sayings is what's gonna get her by in life. And yeah. But yeah, most of the students at this school, they really aren't here to learn.
No,
they're here to live a lifestyle.
The girls, and it's a function of like the old timey society where it's like they're just here because their family knows that since they're rich, they send them to school and with their chaperones, their amas, and they're learning how to just, you know, be society.
Because you don't even choose what you actually want to learn until your second or third year.
It's their second year, yeah, I think. But yeah, yeah. And they are, I mean, but it is learning. Like now we're at the part where
they're,
like,
they're in general education.
It's just school now. Like it's like, and I mean, obviously that's what you're working up to, which is like, even though Galinda thought she was good to go on learning, there's actually things that they're expected to learn.
Things that, yeah, definitely. And as school's happening and she's getting to know, you know, people and doing these things, she starts, her almas are kind of setting up outings for the girls to go and do these things. Mm-hmm. And Galinda's pretty grateful because Elphaba doesn't ever want to go do these things. And she's really, yeah, she's like, I'm not into that. On these outings with other girls and the almas, they begin to start seeing certain things, like maybe senior boys.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe boys that are out about on town. Yeah, so this is when we start getting a little bit of an introduction to some of the other schools.
Yeah,
There's more to life than Crage Hall, baby.
Exactly, there is more to life than Crage Hall. There's Three Queens.
Mm-hmm.
No, Three Queens, right. College, which this school is kind of giving more of a theatrical boys school. Like, that's what I would say that they kind of are. and there's these senior boys that are out with their beers in the middle of the afternoon. They're dancing together under willow trees to a white bear violinist that they hired.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. They're wearing nothing but their clinging cotton drawers and school scarves. That's pretty hot.
Yeah.
Like, they're literally going to pay a bear to play the cello for us so that we can get all this attention.
Yeah. They're like, now we dance.
Yeah. And they are dancing, and they're dancing around a statue of Lurline, the fairy queen. And
Lurline the fairy queen.
Lurline the fairy queen. And the girls and the almas are watching shamelessly.
Yeah.
They're like, oh. Okay. But as they're watching, the boys then get shooed away by proctor of their school. And it's interesting because they weren't really concerned too much about the nudity. It was more the fact that they were dancing around this Lurline statue. Mm-hmm.
It's like sacrilegious.
It's giving old times. It's giving royalty.
Yeah.
That's the thing. There was something earlier too that was like we didn't really discuss, but like the wizard is here. The mm-hmm. wizard is reigning. He's the reason the rubies are being taken out of fucking Quadling country. And when people are, quote, worshiping, certainly worshiping, but if people are seeming to, like, be interested in Lurline, well, Lurline ordained Ozma as queen. So if you believe in Lurline, you think Ozma's queen, I'm not the fucking wizard. So, like, that's a royalist
just
notion.
Go out and be pleasure faithers.
Yeah.
And get TikTok-ism. Drunk and have a good time.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I got you.
Yeah. So it won't do. So that's just a background idea that will obviously be another huge theme.
Yeah. Just a nice example of kind of the feelings of being maybe in the more city area and like kind of what people are pushing, I guess.
Yeah.
And so we get to...
I'm surprised that statue's even there in Central Oz.
Well, they brought it. They put it on a three-legged stool.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. But then we kind of fast forward a little bit to a random Saturday evening. The Almas, they have a night off.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're going to hit the town. They're going to go hit the town. They have a pleasure faith meeting. Glinda decided to stay in after she had a little bit of a squabble with her high-end friends. And she's like, I got a headache. I'm not doing this no more. They're actually annoying.
And you know, we don't really like get into what that was, but you know she did not play it off well.
No.
Yeah.
She was probably like, okay, well, fuck you for today.
Yeah.
I have a headache.
Yeah. I'm afraid you've given me quite a headache.
I simply must go lay down.
Exactly. And so, yeah, she decides to retire early, and Elphaba is, of course, home.
Yeah, where else?
Yeah, and I'm like, where else the fuck is she be? And not only is she at home, but she is reading per usual.
Just talking about speaking other languages. And there's a little bit of a storm happening.
And it does break a window in their freaking thing. But we won't get into that just yet.
Yeah, because I have something to say about that.
We will be getting into...
Sorry, I just realized what Wyatt has to say about that.
Yeah, I do have something to say about that.
We will be getting into that a little bit. But yeah, Glinda commented on Elphaba looking cozy, which was probably her first social interaction with Glinda in like the 3 months or like three or four months.
And honestly, think about how like dejected and down she has to feel. Like she just got in a fight with her friends. Now she's coming home to she starts the conversation with her roommate. And doesn't it like literally begin with Elphaba being like, you can't stand there, you're blocking the fire.
Yeah, yeah. She was like, are you okay if I like sit in front of the fire? And she was like, well, not if you cast in shadows. No, exactly.
Which just makes
like
sense.
So she's just getting it from all sides, poor thing.
Yeah. And Glinda's like, what the hell are you reading all the freaking time? And Elphaba goes on to explain that she reads a lot of different things, but today she's reading old sermons from the Unionism faith, which mm-hmm. we know
that's what Frex is.
Exactly. So little bit different than the pleasure faith and the fucking Lurleen. Yeah, it's the other one. And Glinda's like, why the fuck would you be doing that? Like, that sounds so boring. Like, I'm so not into that.
And Elphaba's like, yeah, maybe I'm not either. I'm just reading it because I'm reading it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't
She's
like it.
My dad was a pastor. And Glinda's like, then ask him about it.
I have to say, I love the way that Elphaba, like, when people ask her what she's doing, she's so, like, literal with it. And I just really like that. I'm like,
yeah,
like, she's like... This is just what I'm reading right now. I might be reading something different next time you ask me, but this is what I'm reading now, so this is what I'm doing. Like,
yeah, like, I'm not, when you ask me what I'm doing, I'm not going to explain why I'm doing this. I'm telling you I'm reading it. That doesn't mean I like it. Yeah.
Why are you reading that? To comprehend it.
Yeah, it's like, I'm learning.
Because I'm trying to understand, I'm trying to learn, which we love. Because that's what, you know, she's kind of the only person there doing what she should be doing at Chiz.
Exactly, yeah.
If we're being honest.
Of all the girls
in
this class.
I do think that the playing and having fun is also a very important part of the experience.
Being social too,
I need her to get that.
Mm-hmm.
I do want her to have that too.
She's doing one extreme.
Yeah.
Glinda's doing the other.
Yes, actually, very true.
They need to meet in the middle a little bit. That's why they're good for each other.
They're holding space for the lyrics for Defying Gravity
They deserve each other.
But then...
they deserve each other.
Yeah.
But then Glinda, she finds one of her old hats. And how did that come about again? Because I have here just found, but I'm like, there was some weird, like, it fell out of some basket or some suitcase.
So in, and I think this may be the case, maybe in the Broadway show, but out of the stage production, but in the movie, the Fanny in the movie and Shenshen find like this hat that Glinda's like, oh, my like nanny made me that. Isn't it ugly? But like they just kind of find it and they're like, oh, and they're like, put it on Elphaba. Wouldn't that be deliciously hateful because she looks so bad? So in this, it's just some, it's a completely different hat. It doesn't look the same.
Yeah, it does not look like the black hat.
It is not the witch's hat.
It's got like orange and yellow in it. It's not the hat that you guys would probably be thinking.
Yeah,
of.
This is like a flapper hat, but from the year 3022.
Yeah, it's still not a very good hat. The way that they did describe it was that this would be the hat that a man would wear if he was trying to dress up as a woman.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm like,
it's like a very like Bonnie and Clyde type.
Yeah. It has like a veil on it. But yeah, but
you know, I saw a really interesting TikTok about, you know, someone's interpretation of that scene in the movie when Fanny and Shenshen find the hat. And I might have sent it to you guys, but they're saying like Glinda knows everything she packed to bring to Shiz. She knows every single article of clothing. She thought that hat was cute. She liked that hat.
Oh, that's interesting. That is interesting.
When they pull it out, they're like, what the fuck is this? She's like, I don't know. What is that? Because it's like Glinda packing for Shiz. She didn't just throw a bunch of shit into a box.
Yeah,
that's true.
She chose what she was bringing to Shiz.
That's interesting, actually.
I do like that take, yeah. Because I would say that. And they were the ones who found it first and said their little comments. So we don't really, we can't really.
That works.
Say that.
Like
that
she was
going to
wear that tomorrow.
She actually had a whole outfit planned. But also another thing that's a little different than the movie and the play. When Glinda does convince Elphaba to put the hat on eventually, she's surprised about how good she looks.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, you're actually very pretty.
Yeah, and she's kind of mad about it because she's like, Elphaba, you're pretty. Don't do that. Like, I thought this was going to be funny, but you look good.
Take it off.
Yeah.
But honestly, yeah, it was like in the book, this moment is popular.
I would say this moment because this is the moment
the connection is being created.
And it's very cute too. And this is kind of where I got my cocktail idea from, because it's all about Glinda thinking about getting her to just think about something and like ask questions to try to understand instead of just trying to say what you think everyone else wants you to say.
Right.
Because now she's talking with someone who she actually doesn't respect, I'd say, but or more just like she doesn't really, there's no like leverage for her.
Right.
And so she can just say what she wants to say.
So do you want to get into their conversation about good and evil?
Yeah. So basically Glinda asks about the boring readings and stuff, and Elphaba says that she's reading about a sermon about good and evil and whether it exists or not. And this does, it strikes up a conversation. And Glinda doesn't really know what she thinks.
Well, like she like doesn't even like want to be challenged to think that way at the start. I feel like. She's just like, I don't know. Evil is being bored. You just want to get into some mischief, whatever. Like
the thing is, the problem that Glinda I think faces is that everything that she knows to say is really the goal of what she's saying is to point attention toward herself or away from herself, but it's not very thoughtful. And we get like, because in this conversation, she's like, oh, like, you know, I don't know, like, ask your dad, I don't know, how about this, like, somewhat kind of a joke. And Elphaba's like, I don't know either, my dad doesn't know, I'm just trying to like think about this, I'm trying to be a thought partner with you. But Glinda just doesn't get how to do it. And literally at the end of the conversation,
and they have different experiences too and stuff, so like even her saying like talking about her dad and stuff, and she was like, yeah, but like ministers aren't supposed to really know the answers to these things. They really are the people that are supposed to be asking the questions and making you think.
And start the conversation.
And I just feel like at the end of the conversation, though, Glinda is like, oh, I don't read very well. I dress to kill, though. And it's like, that's a Galinda thing where she's like, oh, I did it right. I made the conversation go the way I wanted. But Elphaba's not playing a game in the conversation. Elphaba's trying to have a conversation.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really work. And it just ends kind of there. Like, there's it just doesn't work because Galinda's never been pushed like this before in her life.
Right. No, not at all. Yeah.
And I mean, they both kind of differ on their thoughts of like where good and evil come from, but this is going to be a huge plot, like a huge thinking point throughout the book is like good and evil, soul versus soulless.
Yeah.
So just listeners, keep your brains on that subject because it does come back. This is just kind of where it gets started.
Yeah.
And it also is, I think the musical does a good job of calling back to it right in the opening moments of the musical where it's like, are people born wicked? Blah, 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 blah,
mm-hmm.
blah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because Elphaba's stance is that like wickedness comes when goodness goes away. Like mm-hmm. it's not there until goodness leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's morning now and Alma is back. And she has quite a few stories about her night. Some involved a young witch in pink undergarments throwing knives at piglets that bled champagne. Yeah.
Okay. The way that I'm just like, wait, what? I don't remember that.
That did happen. And also there was a fat man that was threatening to kiss the witch the whole night too. And it was just so fun. It was so much yes. fun. Alma Clutch.
A drag show?
No, literally that's what I was feeling. I was like, this is a drag show. Until they started threatening the witch with kisses. I was like, okay, I actually don't touch the drag queens. Thank you. So yeah, Pleasure Faith is crazy, and the Yamas really enjoyed every second of it. And Alma Clutch then notices that the window is shattered, and she's like, so you guys had boys sneaking in, is that what's going on? And the girls were like, no, there would have been no way boys snuck in with that storm that was happening. And Alma's like, what storm? And it's like, wait, what?
So interestingly, in the movie, when Elphaba gets there, the window's open and Glenn is like, no, I like it to be open. And Elphaba's like, no, I like it shut. And they kind of like fight for a second and then the window like shatters and they're like, oh, like how crazy. Like, but it's obviously Elphaba's magic.
They make it, I feel like in the musical and in the movie, like Madame Morrible is, I mean, she does have the weather power, but outside of that, she's almost powerless. Mm-hmm. They make every other like piece of magic Elphaba.
That's true. And it is, honestly.
Yeah, but yeah. Not in this. That shit's horrible.
And I also, think it was Elphaba.
Actually, I don't agree with that because Elphaba doesn't have her weird, like, incontrollable powers.
Well, I feel like we're still
book.
Kind of a little bit up in the air. I feel like yeah, it's not it's really super clear. And even Elphaba is like, it's kind of strange how on this side of town there would be a storm, but then on the other side of town there's no storm.
That's true.
Like, and this must be a really weird world that I know nothing about.
And
you know?
Which is, you're right.
Which is why it can't possibly be Elphaba doing that.
Well, I don't know if it can't possibly be, but you're right. The
why
only
would
reason,
she be confused?
The only reason I was thinking that was because I'm putting the movie where it's her and I'm connecting it. So I'm like, oh, like it's her on both sides. But it's just something that happens that in the movie is obviously attributed to Elphaba. So
yeah.
Like it is unclear.
Yeah, I just feel like the book is like really different in the way that the musical and the movie have like Elphaba will be like, oh, no, I'm mad. And then things will go flying. That doesn't happen anywhere in the book.
No.
Like that never happens. We follow.
It never turns back to Elphaba in any way.
We follow her for like 45 years and that nothing like that ever happens.
But
spoiler,
yeah. So,
spoiler alert.
And so now we're kind of continuing on with the day and Galinda is with her other friends gossiping about how Elphaba would not shut up about evil last night.
Isn't that crazy? I'm like, God, I mean,
she literally had
she's
that whole conversation with her just so that she could have things to gossip.
And she even made fun of her fucking hat. And she said, yeah, she looked, she was calling her frumpy as a cow, bitch. Yeah, Galinda's pissing me off. I'm like, ugh, she's just annoying. And
just pathetic.
And Finae is honestly doing so basically her friends know that she's roomies with Elphaba by at this point.
Yeah.
And Finae, she's doing way too much to build Galinda's ego because she's even like, oh, Galinda, you're just too good.
Galinda, you're
too
just
good
too
good to be putting up with something like that. Yeah. Which we do get that we get that type of same thing in the movie.
That's so funny.
But Annie is definitely fucking up Ariana Grande's ass.
It is interesting, though, because I feel like in the musical, it's very like nobody likes Elphaba and Galinda's on that bandwagon. Whereas here, it's like Galinda is going out of her way to make everyone hate Elphaba more.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then they're telling her, oh my God, I can't believe you put up with that.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's interesting. That's the first time you even spoken to that person.
And girl, it did not even, you were not even annoyed. Like, you had a good time. Exactly.
Galinda loved it. But
you guys were having a fun little conversation.
She wakes up in the morning and she's like, how today can I position myself above other girls? I'll have insider information about someone that everybody doesn't know about and is kind of like weird about. Like, it's like, it's in
very
character,
much that insider
obviously.
Information. Yeah. But she's using that to her advantage.
She's just using it, which is sucks.
So we kind of now jump ahead. It's the first evening of snow. And Madame Morrible. Madame Morrible has put together a little bit of a poetry gathering.
Yeah.
She's invited boys from Three Queens, also another school, Ozma Towers. I know nothing about Ozma Towers, so don't ask me questions.
No, not yet.
But yeah, Galinda got there early so she could kind of get the chair that matched her outfit, get the lighting just right so she looks good because she knows boys are coming.
Yeah, she's like, I don't have anything to say. I just got to make sure I look right here.
Exactly.
She's like, poetry? What's poetry?
Yeah.
Even though she's Gillikin, which is the arts and culture capital.
True. And industry.
Yeah. But everyone's, you know, showing up. The Alma showed up as well. That strange TikTok man. Yeah, he's there. Don't forget about him. He's always sneaking around. Also, Elphaba showed up and she was kind of sitting more in the back. And Madame Morrible begins by starting her quill. Is what they call it.
Do you have the rules to a quill written down? Like what makes it a quill?
No, I don't.
So it's a bunch of stanzas of rhyming words that are related, and then the final like stanza or whatever doesn't rhyme. And the reason it works is because it,
and it's something that's like opposing to
it, the final line creates contrast to the rest of it, and that draws attention to the point.
Yeah.
So that's like a classic Ozian fucking poetry style, I guess. Yeah. Which honestly kind of works. If we read one, it wouldn't be a bad thing.
Yeah. And so Madame Morrible starts with saying her quill and stuff. And she does two of them. And the last one she does, the last line she says, animals should be seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm.
And the people were shocked.
And
they
the
were like,
were shook.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
And it's interesting because it's like a general hubbub. Like one of the themes that I've noticed is like every time the students are in a position where they have to respond to what's happening with animals, none of them seems like they know what the fuck is going on. Which I'm like,
they
do you
don't,
not,
yeah.
Is there no newspaper or
it
anything?
Doesn't, or they're just not reading the
so
news.
It's like, I feel like,
because there definitely
of,
are newspapers and there are things that I think are being shared.
Yeah. I think it emphasizes that
maybe a little bias
at the boys' school or the schools that the boys are allowed to attend. I think there's a higher emphasis put on learning versus the girls, as we've seen, because of like kind of the way the school works and the way society works, they're kind of just going through the motions.
They even
I do
say
Craich
Hall is like the general studies.
Oh, and that's true too, also.
Where I
getting
feel like the other boys' schools have kind of more of a specific thing that they study.
And they are the higher level school, or like the higher prestige schools.
It's just interesting because I feel like after animals are seen, should be seen and not heard, the hubbub about the room is more just the students being like, oh, poetry, 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 poetry. While like the animals in the room are like, whoa, what the fuck?
Exactly.
And but Elphaba seems to be the only student to have an actual opinion about it, which I do think is similar to the musical, which is we don't get the poetry summit. But
yeah, we don't get. Well, that's the thing, that's too, is that in the movie, we get more of like, maybe this was a student that did this, where in this, it's the headmistress saying this.
Yeah,
so
public.
In public, in front of a bunch of people, professors, other people at the schools, like, it is a little bit, it seems a little bit more heavy.
I like this better, too, because Dillamund and the other animals in attendance are like fuck you, bitch. Yeah. We're out of here.
Yeah, Dr. Dillamon storms out.
I feel like...
The boar or something, he storms out. There is, like, one other like an animal ape, that kind of, like, sits around because he's, like, really unsure, like, what to do. Mm-hmm. Like, he wants to storm out, but he also seems like he might be a little nervous.
And yeah, so what's going to happen to me?
Yeah, he kind of freezes.
In the musical, in both the stage musical and the movie, I think it's very effective, but I also feel like it's not true to Dillamon's character, where when he flips over the board and it says animals should be seen and not heard, he becomes very, like, humiliated and embarrassed and, like, loses his cool a little bit and, like, gets all clumsy and is like, oh, everybody out of here, everybody out of here.
Well, the first thing he says is, who wrote this?
Yeah, but then he's... I mean, and then what I said, but I just feel like it's like, I feel like in the book, he has his power. He maintains his power.
He does.
And is like, I'm walking out of here with pride. Whereas Elphaba has to like come split a fucking sandwich with him and let him eat her.
But there is a moment in the book where Dr. Dillamon does storm out and he's like way more like, this is fucking propaganda and it's not good propaganda. And he storms his ass out. But then there's the boar that also is like, fuck this too. But the boar is the one who actually knocks over a vase as he's trying to leave because he's trying not to step on Mila's like fucking train of a dress for some reason.
Yeah,
he's
like taking up space.
Yeah. So I feel like that was like maybe a little bit of Easter egg in the movie of like, you know,
the vase shattering or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there
that's
was
actually so interesting.
Kind of that moment, but it wasn't with Dr. Dillamon. It was with another animal.
Yeah, it's just a reference.
That's a good point.
But yeah, so, and you kind of said the only person that really said anything or had any other thing to say about that poetry was Elphaba. And Elphaba goes immediately up to Glinda. Yeah.
She pulls her chair up.
She sits right between
We're
Glinda
able to talk
and all
in
her friends.
Now.
Yeah. And she's like, so what the fuck do you think about this? And Glinda's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, people are here. People are looking at me.
Yeah.
There's boys here. I don't want them seeing me interact with her. And Elphaba just kind of sat there the whole fucking time as other poems went on, like, commenting, saying her thing, unbothered, which I fucking love, honestly. And Glinda's, like, freaking the fuck out. She's not happy about this.
Yeah.
And as the poetry night kind of ends and stuff, there's a boy. A boy that comes up to them and he introduces himself. He's a boy from Briscoe Hall, another school. This school is more of a agricultural school at Shiz, which kind of makes sense that someone like a small munchkinlander named Bach would maybe be at.
Bach.
Well, actually, his name's Master Bach.
Yeah,
Master Bach.
Because they talk to each other in that
Miss
way.
Miss Elphaba, Master Bach.
I love how the girls are still Miss, but instead of Mr., the men are Master.
Yeah, they're Master, which is interesting. But yeah, as we're being introduced to Bach, we learn that he was in the same playpen as Elphaba. And he recognized her. And he was like, oh, I know you. And he called her Miss Elfie. Which Glinda was like, Miss Elfie, excuse me. And he even goes, oh, this is crazy, because he goes into, yeah, I remember the time dragon. My dad's the mayor.
Yeah. Buffy.
Yes. Bach's dad is that goddamn mayor who is fucking talking down to Frex about the whole
hey, just like, let's see what happens.
Let's get tested then. Let's see if Sin wins.
That's
something
actually,
that's Bach's dad.
That's something that I didn't fully understand though, is that like Bach was like 4 when that happened and he fully remembers it.
Because he's a little older than Elphaba.
4 years at least.
Like
she was
3 years.
She was born that day.
Yeah, because he was 3, but still.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, she was born that
but
day.
But he's three years older than her.
I thought they were all freshmen.
No, so she's a freshman, but he's been at school now for a couple years.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think it's 3 years. He's a couple years older. But yeah, his father was the mayor of Rush Margins. He remembered the time dragon. He even brought up how they still talk about it. Like people have not forgotten about
the
that.
The day that Elphaba's dad was fucking humiliated.
He's like, yeah, I remember that, don't you? he even reminds her of Gonette, who was the lady that took care of them at the
daycare.
Yeah, the daycare that they were at. And Elphaba's like, okay, well, do you want me to say your whole fucking history too? Huh? Like, she's annoyed with him. She's like, why?
She is.
Yeah, and she
people don't talk to Elphaba. That's the thing. No one ever talks to her. And Bach doesn't know that, obviously.
Yeah.
But like, Elphaba's like, oh, like, you're doing this weird thing, like, in acknowledging me in public, like, what's happening?
Well,
like,
she's not used to that. It's embarrassing for her. And I think also because of why. Because I think that Linda explains pretty well, like,
she does,
why
yeah.
that's a problem for her.
She does, yeah. I mean, Elphaba, I mean, poor Bok, he kind of caught strays at this moment, too. Because she was like, you're a fucking frog, which was extremely rude. I mean, don't call people a frog, but it's extremely rude to Bok because they describe him as looking a bit amphibian.
Yeah.
So
it's personal.
It was personal. she really went below the belt. But yeah, Glinda was really shocked by this behavior. Like, she was like, oh my gosh. And Elphaba runs away. And she does. She kind of explains. She was like, well, you know, the reason you remembered her is most likely because of her skin color, and maybe she doesn't want people remembering her because of that and stuff.
He's like, God, why is she being such a bitch? And she's like, I don't know.
Which honestly, Glinda,
she's green.
She's thinking.
Exactly. Glinda
she's thinking about something.
She's tried her tonic. She is thinking.
She's thinking about other people just herself.
Other people.
Yeah. So as this happens, or as Elphaba kind of disperses, Glinda and Bok now start to have tea. And Glinda's like, tell me all about Munchkinland. Tell me what's going on. And they kind of start to have their little moment, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
As the week went on, there's lots of talk about that whole poetry gathering and everything that happened and Madame Horrible and what she said and stuff. And even Dr. Delamond in his class, he interrupts his teachings so that he can discuss the type of, you know, poem that she, you know, that she said and kind of discuss it with his students and almost kind of give them, like, you know, be like, This is what's happening, and this is how I feel about it as an animal, you know? And he's trying to get them to understand his own perspective. And this is the trouble that's happening in Emerald City that no one fucking knows about. And that ban has happened. Like, it is happening. Mm-hmm. It is what's going on right now. They're gathering all the animals and herding them back to the farmlands. And the students are like, well, you know, you're a teacher, so why are you concerned about this? And he was like, well, yeah, I'm a teacher, but, like, what about my kids? Or what about my nieces and nephews? Like, what about, like, you know, the people under me? And on top of that, too, like, what about the people that fought so hard for someone like me to even be in this position?
Right. Yeah. You know? He's like, my family had to pay extra so that when I was in school, people could take notes for me and they would take the tests for me. Like, and I would like tell. So it's like all of that is wasted if all of a sudden I can't use the train to get here. I can't go to the supermarket. I can't go get fucking whatever other public service. Like, it's completely just oppressive.
It also goes to show just the way that, like, these human and Munchkin students, like, can't really look past their own lives. Because is it here where, like, I think Glinda is like, do you have kids?
And Glinda's like, out here playing devil's advocate.
She's
like,
do you even have kids? And he's like, it's not about if I have kids. There are kids.
It's like, what if I did want to get married and I did want to have kids? Yeah. Now these are things that I have to think about.
Yeah,
you know?
These are,
like,
real things, like, that
can
happen.
Look at what I'm saying to you and not look at my personal situation. And, like, that's the thing that happens all the time. People look at Oprah and Michael Jordan and they're like, oh, see, black people have it all. Like, it's just, you have to look at the bigger picture.
Yeah, it's not just black and white. And so, yeah, that is kind of where, you know, his class and discussing everything went. And when the class ends, Glinda makes her way out. She also checks to see what Elphaba's doing, and Elphaba is looking concerned. She's like, looks bothered, and we see that at the end of class that she actually goes up to Dr. Delamond. We don't know exactly what happened, but we do know that she basically went up there to comfort him because he seems pissed.
Yeah.
Like, he seems like he is definitely going through it and not feeling the best. And Elphaba seems to be the only person that actually gives a fuck. Mm-hmm. and a few days later, or like a few days go by, and they're now in class with Madame Horrible. And Elphaba is like, well, Madame Horrible starts calling for questions of what they're discussing and stuff. And Alpha then is like, well, if we could actually go over your poetry little thing last week, that would be great. And Madame Warble's like, why? Like, why do we need to be doing that? But Elphaba kind of explains that Dr. Delamont thought it was in poor taste after the bans on animal mobility. And Madame Warble just accuses him of not understanding irony.
Mm.
Because he's not a poet. He's a doctor. And he's okay. Just a goat.
So then explain the irony to me, bitch.
Exactly. And she does ask that. Well, the annoying thing, too, about Madame Warble, she was like, well, can you define irony for me? And Elphaba, being someone who's here to learn.
Yeah.
She was like, no, I don't know. Like,
it's like, actually, you define irony for me because you're the one using it. And
you're the one that's
you brought
using
it up
it.
Today for the first time.
Exactly. And that's the thing that Madame Warble does. It's like, it seems like she's using her power and stuff and her knowledge to kind of get over Elphaba. But the thing with Elphaba is that she is here to learn, and she's here to hear different perspectives and stuff. And that was something too, is like, Madame Warble was like, walk in other people's shoes that are wiser than you. And Elphaba was like, that was what I was doing with Dr. Delamont. I was trying to put myself in his shoes and see where he's coming from and stuff. And so, like, Elphaba always had something back to say to Madame Warble.
Yes.
And you could see Madame Warble just, like, getting irritated
with her. And the thing
was,
Elphaba, my interpretation of this moment is that Elphaba didn't even start the conversation to challenge Madame Warble.
No.
She just wanted to understand.
Exactly.
And then Madame Warble got defensive, which just made it increasingly more frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's like when it ends with just Elphaba being like, are you being ironic right now?
Yes.
Like, she is genuinely just like, I can't.
She is like, I'm not understanding.
It's mental
you.
Gymnastics with this woman. She just wants to break you down and make you tired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She did it.
And the thing is, she can successfully do that to Galinda, but she's not having as easier a time doing that with Elphaba.
Yeah.
Right.
Because
Galinda just wants to smooth it out and go with the flow.
Exactly.
But Elphaba's like, I actually am here for my own purposes, and you diverting me is actually just making it harder to get there.
Yeah.
Instead of like bending to your will, basically.
She's Hermione with the house elves. Like, she's like, this is really important to me right now. I won't stop.
Yeah. It's giving special interest.
No, exactly. All right. So now we're roughly at the second semester, and Elphaba and Galinda still roomies. Nothing changed. Galinda really thought it would, but no.
Which,
and let me tell you,
just as a contrast to the movie, like, Galinda doesn't really want it. Or she wants it to change, but in the movie, they're like almost friends now. Like, they're it's just so different.
And I do think that she does have a certain feeling about Elphaba in the book, but she's still trying to switch it.
Mm-hmm.
So much that she goes to Madame Warble again to basically be like, because also Madame Warble was like offered the pink dorm to her and was like, so how's your Alma doing? Do you think she'll be able to take care of all those fucking little kids in the pink dormitory?
Mm-hmm.
And Glenn is like, no, she's not.
No,
she's
she
still
gets worse by the day.
Every day. She's like, I try not to talk about it because I'm such a nice person. But she's crazy. And I just deal with it because I'm just so good. And the headmistress, after that whole debacle, she kind of suggests that Galinda's, you know, she should start thinking about her academic career and maybe
mm-hmm.
which direction she wants to go. I like that. And the headmistress, Madame Warble, she suggests that Galinda should maybe go towards sorcery. And Galinda was not thinking that because she heard that sorcery is difficult.
Yeah.
And as we know that she's not here to learn, she's not here to do things. And she's like, yeah, sorcery I heard was like a grind, and learning the spells and even being able to understand them. You know, she was like not feeling that way. But Madame Warble kind of tries to convince her by being like, well, if you go to Sorcerer, you might be able to change your roommates because mm-hmm. Elphaba is going with natural sciences and you might be roomed with someone who's, you know, going the same academic career that you're going.
Starch difference from the musical mm-hmm. because the musical Elphaba couldn't be on Shiz campus for more than 2.5 seconds before
yeah.
Madame Morbol was like, many years I have waited. And the only reason that Glinda ever gets a fucking wand is because Elphaba's like, well, I want her to study sorcery with me.
It's yeah. So
Elphaba doesn't even take sorcery.
Yeah. Yeah. It's literally so opposite. It's so opposite. Which yeah, it's just crazy. She is pushing her to go towards sorcery. And yeah, Glinda's like, okay, I guess. And in this conversation too, they continue their having tea and all that stuff. TikTok man. You remember him? He's there. He's giving them tea.
Dramatic.
He's giving them tea. He's still there. And while the girls are chatting, Madame Morbol kind of starts talking about Elphaba and her sister.
This is so inappropriate.
Yeah. This is really, because this is just gossiping.
Why are you telling another kid this?
Yeah. And especially about her own roommate.
Yeah.
And she goes into being like, yeah, Elphaba. You know, if you're still roommates with her, she's going to have her sister here eventually. And her sister's difficult. Mm-hmm. I'm not really going to say anything other than that. But yeah, she's difficult.
You thought Green was bad.
Yeah.
Just you wait.
He's like, oh, yeah, her sister requires a lot of care, almost endless care. And it's like, what's going on? Like, literally, what's going on?
And that's how Glinda feels. She's like, why would Madame Morbol make, like, remarks like that?
How did Glinda not say, why are you telling me this?
Because Glinda doesn't say what's on her mind.
And she actually wants to know.
But she is curious, yeah. But that leaves us at the end of Gilligan. Galinda. And Blake, what would you call that?
Fish face makes a bad place.
Wow. So we are at a poetry gathering.
Animals
right
should That's be seen quill. And not.
That's a quill right there. Thank you for listening to Oz Hour. Please join us next time as we continue with Wicked, the life and times of the Wicked Witch of the West. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Oz Hour Podcast for the latest on everything Oz. Oz Hour, created and hosted by Blake Stone and Wyatt Swingham, co-hosted by Hannah Aguirre, audio production by Charlie Johnson, theme music written and performed by Rudy Klobis. Cover art by Valentin Lucas.